to Slightly Offsides, your perfect game plan for all things college and professional football. Hosted by Dre and Mike.
Welcome to episode 3 of Slightly Offsides. Today we have a special guest with us, Greg. Greg is a recruiting guru who has spent the last 3 or 4 years of his life perfecting recruiting crystal balls, especially in the Big Ten, but he also pays attention to the national scope. So we decided to bring him in today for our National Signing Day episode and talking about the transfer portal as well. Great stuff going on in this episode. So we'll get right into it. First of all, Greg, thanks for joining.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Looking forward to chopping it up with you guys.
Absolutely, man. It's going to be a great episode. So we'll get right into it. First thing that we want to talk about is this recruiting cycle has been pretty interesting, right? With the transfer portal and a lot more parity kind of starting to come about in college football. You've seen some classes start to surprise you from, you know, schools that are starting to be on the come up a little bit here. What kind of schools are you guys looking at that have kind of popped up on your radar with some surprising classes here?
Looking at the recruiting rankings this year, we've had some interesting classes. If I were to mention any of them, I'd definitely mention Texas A&M, obviously the number one recruiting class, making a big turnaround over the past few years. Jimbo Fisher really showing what he's getting paid for, which is that recruiting and defense. And they've even gotten a nice QB on the deck here. I'd also like to mention Kentucky and North Carolina, two SEC teams that are really, really showing that they can pick up a good squad. Mark Stoops has done a phenomenal job at Kentucky, 19 commits this year, and he's made some great pickups in just overall.
Yeah, Texas A&M's the obvious one. They're leading the pack. They might have the best class of all time. But I think for them, it's very important that they make the playoffs in the next few years. Because remember, like 2013, Ole Miss had the highest class. You know, they had Laramie Tunsil, they had Laquon Treadwell. They had the number one overall recruit, Robert Kimdichie, and they weren't really able to fully capitalize on that class. And you know, they're time kind of passed where they had a chance to move up in the college football world. So if A&M wants to be, you know, a solidified year in, year out contender, they're going to need to make the playoffs in these next few years so they can keep bringing in this blue chip talent. And I think they've really capitalized on, you know, LSU being kind of down, Texas kind of being down. You know, that's a hotbed for recruits.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point you make, Greg. I mean, Texas now is essentially going to be faced with like the Georgia problem, right? Stacking your team, but you got to get past Bama, right? That's going to be the biggest thing for these SEC schools, is they have to get over that Alabama hump in order to, you know, break that next kind of level. So you guys talked about Texas A&M. So I just have to throw this out here. I did some stats. Greg, you said it might be one of the best recruiting classes of all time. So I looked it up actually, and I said, if they get all the recruits that they're still supposed to get in the late signing window, what would they end up with, right? They'd end up with the second best class of all time, just on like a points basis. Okay. 18 out of their 27 letters of intent right now are top 10 positional rankings. I mean, that's just ridiculous, right? Like that's like video game. Greg, I know you and I both play NCAA 14. You don't see that stuff in real life. That's kind of the stuff that we do on our couch. That's just crazy. But yeah, and Dre, you touched on my other two teams, right? UNC nabbing two of the top 11 players in the country. When's the last time we talked about that happening outside of basketball for UNC? I mean, that's just crazy. And then Kentucky, another basketball school, pulls in just their second top 25 class since 2014. And they're getting help where they need it, right? They're getting that massive tackle, Goodwin. He's just an absolute stud, and they're protecting their D-line as well. So, I mean, yeah, those are great classes as well. And I think, you know, with the great classes we've had this year, we've also had some really disappointing classes. So, like, what are the ones that, I know there's a pretty obvious one that we're probably all going to touch on, but what are some of the other classes and what ones kind of jumped out to you guys as like, hey, this was a huge disappointment, somebody we really expected better from?
USC had a decent year, not the greatest. I think it just has more to do with coaching. They still picked up a decent class, and the coaching is not from bad coaching. It's just a transition that they're going through at the current moment. And, you know, it would be nice if Lincoln could have pulled in a few more. But, you know, I think that overall in the next couple of years, the transfer portal is going to be their friend. And even then, you know, here in the near future, they're probably going to get a few more blue chip guys. You know, they're going to be really, really solid here in the next few years, as long as that recruiting starts to come in for them.
Yeah, I mean, ever since Lincoln came in, everything changed with them. I mean, before, you know, when they had Clay Helton, they had – one year they had, like, the 50th ranked recruiting class. And, like, it doesn't matter if you're going 5-7. Like, if you're USC, you should have a top 25 class minimum every year, if not, like, top 15. But, I mean, they're going to get those Cali guys to stay in state now. You know, you saw with the Branch brothers, they were longtime Ohio State leans. And once Lincoln came in, you know, they decided they're going to stay home almost like instantaneously. So it kind of shifts the paradigm of college football now. And same token with Texas A&M, like Lincoln's got to win. And I think he will. But if Lincoln like is going 7-5, you know, that's when other programs like Ohio State and Bama are going to come back to Cali and start to take advantage of, you know, guys that don't want to play for USC anymore, so they're looking elsewhere.
Okay, so I'll stop you right there. I'll ask a real quick question about Lincoln. I don't want to get on a tangent here, but to me, it kind of seemed like Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma was kind of like stuck, right? Like he had great teams, and I'm not knocking his success at all, but defense was the main impediment for him to like really attaining, you know, the next level in status as a coach in like a program builder. Like, do you think that him bringing along Alex Grinch to USC, do you think that that like is going to help anything? I mean, I don't know. I can just see him attaining the same level of success as USC and not necessarily building that next level until he starts to care more about defensive development.
Yeah, I can totally agree with that. I mean, and it's one of those things that I think we see a lot of with Big 12 coaches, just in general, lack of, you know, care for defense. I wouldn't say that they're awful. You know, they're still Power Five schools, but it's just one of those things that I think that they prioritize offensive minded sets just more so than they do defensively. And if Lincoln Riley can pull that off at USC, I think he'll be in one hell of a season and a great path in the future. Because if he has a defense in the Pac 10, Pac 12, you know, it's going to be a nightmare for a lot of teams.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, when they would go to the playoffs, they'd go 12-1, they'd win the Big 12 and drop a game against, like, Iowa State that they shouldn't have lost. And they just get smoked by, like, Bama or Clemson in the playoffs. Like, you need that defense in order to compete. And, I mean, they weren't able to score a ton of points on those defenses either. Were they the one – did they play LSU in the playoffs?
Yep.
Yeah, that was –
Joe Burrow, yeah.
Joe Burrow threw 7 touchdown passes in the first half. Oklahoma could barely do anything against them. So, like, I feel like Lincoln Riley has a pretty easy path in the Pac-12. I mean, Mario Cristobal leaves Oregon. Like, you don't really have any year-in, year-out contenders. Like, Utah's already always pretty solid. But – nobody's pulling top 10 classes in the Pac-12 besides maybe Oregon. But I feel like, you know, it's there for him to take over the Pac-12 and become, you know, be on that Pete Carroll national stage once again.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think you make a good point. You actually touched on a couple of my disappointing classes. So, Greg, what were the other disappointing classes you had?
I had LSU and I had Clemson. I mean, Clemson's the obvious one. And I feel like, you know, a lot of this we can talk about, like, we can relate it to the transfer portal. But from a recruiting standpoint, like, this is the first year I feel like Dabo's dynasty kind of got tested. He didn't have that blue chip QB that he thought he had in DJ. You know, we kind of thought it would be the status quo. You know, you're replacing Trevor Lawrence and Deshaun Watson with another 5-star, but it didn't pan out that way. And you know, Clemson never really had great offensive lines. That definitely hurt them a lot. Seemed like Justin Ross was pretty invisible for most of the year. Think he got hurt at some point, too. Will Shipley wasn't as effective as people thought. So when it comes to recruiting, like, that you know, they're losing battles that they were winning in prior years because they're going to the playoffs. And Dabo has very strict criteria for his recruits. He has, you got to fit into the Clemson culture. But if the culture is starting to crumble a little bit, like, the recruits aren't going to buy into that.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. I mean, Clemson was the top one on my list as well. They only had three top positional players. I mean, obviously the guy that stands out, right, is the QB again, Cade Klubnik. It'll be interesting to see if he can go in and compete with DJ right away. Maybe that lights a fire under DJ that wasn't there this year, and we start to see a little bit more what we expected. But I agree with you. I mean, Clemson pulling like a top 25 class as opposed to a top five class, that's pretty crazy. And like what we've come to expect from Clemson in the last 5 to 10 years. I had two other schools, Oregon, with all the attrition and everything. And really, like, I know that the home fan bases for these three schools I'm about to name will argue that it was because of coaching changes and stuff like that. But the truth is here is that none of these classes were particularly strong right before all of this stuff started hitting the fan. Clemson, Oregon, and Miami, right? These were, Oregon and Miami were top 50 classes. I mean, that's pretty crazy. And Oregon and Miami only have 11 and 9 commits. I mean, that's just pretty wild to me. So especially Oregon, they had zero top 10 positional recruits. I mean, that's just, it's not what we were expecting.
And I mean, at this point, you know, it's going to be one of those interesting times where we might see some of these cultures change at certain schools, you know, where they're no longer going to be able to reel in some of these massive recruits. So are they going to start changing up their style and doing some more of the homegrown recruiting, you know, really building on what they already have? Team that sticks out to me like that is Cincinnati. Yeah, they may not be, you know, top 25 recruiting class, top 10 recruiting class, but they typically have the opportunity, regardless of who they get, they're going to build. And I think that's going to be a really important thing for Dabo. I think it's going to be a really important thing for Oregon. It's going to be really, really, really important for a lot of teams that are going through some of these coaching changes, is they're going to have to get used to and start to utilize some of the players that are already sitting there with them.
Yeah, it's going to be uncomfortable, right? I mean, like Dabo, when's the last time that a coach like Dabo sat in a room with kids who weren't like, you know, the kings of the high schools that they're coming from, right? Like, this is going to be where it's definitely going to be a big test for him, and he's not going to have the same guys with him on the sidelines to kind of solve those problems. So, I mean, we'll see, but it was just a lot of team rankings, pretty wild this year. Are there any guys, though, like specific recruits for you guys that you think stand out in this class and have like really high potential of being, you know, like your Travion Henderson type impact, those kind of guys as true freshmen next year?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little biased. There's some guys in Ohio State that I like, but the one guy that was really, really high potential, high ceiling that I was looking at was Keontae Goodwin. And that was a guy that Ohio State kind of lost. You know, Kentucky won that battle over them. So it'll be interesting to see, like, can he step in, you know, year one, year two. It's very rare for a lineman to be able to play. He has a very rare athletic skill set, and he has a very high ceiling because of that. So, I mean, you know, you're recruiting in the future years, and you're talking to running backs, like, and, you know, playing behind a line like that, you know, that's very enticing. So they've always recruited pretty decently, you know, in the Midwest. So it'll be interesting to see how he impacts the future, like, run game and even like the future of the offense of Kentucky in the SEC East.
At the top of my head, I do like CJ Hicks. I think, you know, he's phenomenal player, super athletic. You know, I think he can read the ball really well. And he also, you know, he's great defensive linebacker. So I think he has a chance next year. There's a few players that, you know, they always have a chance. We had mentioned Cade Klubnik at Clemson. If DJ doesn't start to show some, you know, promise and he goes into next season, I don't see it being impossible that this could end up like a Spencer Radler, Caleb Williams situation where they just bench him straight up. You know, they have another player there ready to go. And, if, you know, if the kid's legit, it'll show in practice. It'll show in spring sessions. And if he gets any chances in big blowout games to show what he's got, I think it'll be a really easy pick for Dabo to just go ahead and make that change.
And Cade was a guy that outperformed Quinn Ewers at the Elite 11 camp too. I believe he won MVP of that. So, you know, that's it's a pretty good indicator that you're going to be successful. You have, you know, CJ Stroud won the Elite 11 MVP as a very unheralded player. And Justin Fields won that as well. So I feel like that's geared towards who's kind of like a pro-ready prospect, because a lot of the drills are designed around being pro-ready, going through progressions, being accurate, making good reads, and you're playing and competing against the best talent in America. Another guy that – actually, a pair of guys that I had, couple of Penn State commits, Drew Allar and Nick Singleton. As an Ohio State fan, these guys kind of scare me. Penn State hasn't had a prominent QB really in our lifetime. You could argue Trace McSorley was pretty successful, and he's very good. He won them games. He was a great leader. But, I mean, in a year where Ohio State had Quinn Ewers committed, you know, they didn't pay much attention to, you know, the Northeastern Ohio prospect. But Allar rose up in the rankings, and he's now a bona fide five-star prospect. And you're getting one of the best running backs in the country with him as well. You know, Penn State had Miles Sanders and Saquon Barkley back-to-back. And then they haven't had that playmaker at running back. But, man, if these guys play up to their potential, like, you can see, you know, Penn State's offense putting up points in the future and competing maybe with Ohio State and Michigan, you know, as contenders, not just for the Big Ten, but for the playoffs as well.
Yeah, and that's been – Go ahead.
I was going to say, now, Greg, do you see Drew coming in and you know, possibly taking that job from Clifford the Big Red Dog?
I don't know about year one. I'm not familiar with, you know, how James Franklin will handle that situation, but I feel like he's going to lean on Clifford. He's going to lean on the experience at first, and you don't want to force a freshman QB in when he's not ready. Yeah. Like Sean Clifford came back for a reason for his, you know, sixth year. So I feel like he'll be a good mentor to Drew Allar as well. And it'll be a pretty, like, I feel like it'll be a pretty easy transition, you know, step in, like, learn the system for a year, and then, you know, he's going to hand the keys over to Drew.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point you make with Penn State, Greg. I mean, ever since Trace McSorley left, you kind of saw the electricity fall out of the Penn State offense, and that was kind of the biggest crutch for them in their Big Ten games against, like, their major opponents and why they kind of faltered. But as for myself, I'm looking at a nice list here, guys. I'm going to pick out three that I think are ones that you guys haven't discussed, because I already have those guys as well. But just for the sake of variety here, first one is going to be Evan Stewart for Texas A&M. I mean, this is like probably the most prominent receiving prospect we've ever seen at A&M. It's always been like kind of the issue for them, right? With like Kellen Mond, they never had, besides like maybe Anaya Smith, they never had crazy weapons on the outside, right? They were more tight end focused, running back focused, and then defensively in the lines. So this is a guy that potentially could open up the playbook for him a little bit. And, you know, they have that freshman Wigman coming in, right? He can sling it. So potentially a little bit more electricity going on in Texas A&M there. Another one that I really like here is Will Johnson, corner for Michigan. This is an area that for most of this year seemed to be like the weak link for the Michigan defense, right? They were really worried about their defensive backs. And this was also a guy that early on had kind of looked away from Michigan when they were struggling. And this was kind of perceived to be a big time loss for Michigan fans and that recruiting area, right? But, you know, obviously the resurgence of the program kind of caused him to reconsider. I think he's a big find for them because he's really the first secondary guy they've pulled since Daxton Hill that has like a lot of immediate impact potential. I think he's going to step right in next year. I think he could be a true freshman starter for them and maybe answer some of the questions there. And then the last guy I really like here is a pretty interesting one. I kind of had to search for this guy, but Jalen Snead, linebacker for Notre Dame. Bear with me here, guys. Okay, this guy's an absolute stud. I watched some of his tape. He's definitely like a highly ranked recruit. I'm not trying to say he's a hidden gem or anything, but I like him on this list for one sole reason, and that is the last guy that Notre Dame went in and pulled from SEC territory on the defensive side of the ball. I'll give you guys a guess as to who you think that might be.
I can't think of his name, but he got drafted by the Cowboys. Is it Jalen Smith?
So Jalen Smith, yes. But after him, there was one other guy, and he's probably going to be a top 10 pick this year, safety Kyle Hamilton. So, I mean, this guy has that kind of energy. He's explosive at the linebacker position. I think he has immediate impact potential for them. I think he's going to be somebody really exciting to watch for Notre Dame.
I did want to jump in real quick. Don't want to forget this guy. Obvious guy that has the possibility of making a big jump and, you know, being a really important piece, Travis Hunter.
Yep.
You know, I hate to be the dude that brings the obvious, you know, news to the table, but Travis Hunter he's a beast, man. He is a legit prospect. Even going to Jackson State may not be top radar school, but again, he has the chance to really go make a difference there and then also have a chance to make it to the NFL. So shout out to Travis Hunter. He's phenomenal. Watching him is watching a grown man play against little kids.
Yeah. And I mean, like, it'll kind of be like when Randy Moss played in the FCS, played for Marshall back when, you know, they weren't in the top flight competition. And he absolutely dominated there. And I feel like Travis Hunter is going to be a day one starter. I mean, he's going to be, you know, an All-American in the FCS, and he's just going to dominate there. And, you know, it'll be really cool to follow his career arc because that was just such an unprecedented move. One thing I wanted to touch on was Will Johnson. That was a very crucial recruiting get for Michigan to keep him in state. He was looking at Ohio State very heavily. And at one point, him and Damani Jackson were rumored to be a package deal. And that just didn't pan out for the Buckeyes.
No,
but
it did not. No, it did not. That USC Damani Jackson.
Not even close.
That's a great pickup. That was a great pickup for USC.
That was a very crucial, you know, get for them, keeping their guy in state. I mean, to lose a legacy five-star blue chipper to your biggest rival, I mean, that would have been just a very devastating blow for them. So we'll see. I'm expecting him to make an impact very, very early on and be that sort of next Michigan playmaker. You know, we saw Aiden Hutchinson this year completely dominate. You know, I feel like he has that type of potential to be an X factor for their defense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think there's a lot of guys, like, this class particularly stands out. We mentioned just a few of them, but there's a lot of guys on here that can step right in for a lot of teams, you know, and make a lot of impact because these are teams that, you know, because of the COVID year, right? A lot of these teams are losing a lot of starting players, right? So there's going to be a lot of openings, a lot of question marks. So there's a lot of room for some of these guys to step in and press, especially if they're early enrolling and see the field come week one as a starter. But, you know, a lot of times now that we've kind of moved into this early national signing day period, I don't know if you guys have kind of felt like this, but I definitely feel like it every year. A lot of times there's a tendency to feel like once the early signing window is done, that like kind of the recruiting cycle is over, right? When in reality, like there's still a lot of like marquee prospects that haven't signed anywhere yet. And, you know, they probably won't until February. And those are, you know, potentially high impact guys. Like, they're two of the top 10 players still haven't signed. There's still a bunch of 4 and 5 stars out there. So, Greg, I don't want to put you on the spot here, but seeing as though you're a recruiting guru, I'm just going to toss out some of these names here, and we'll see if we can get like a live crystal ball from you on where you think they're going to end up. And if you don't know, that's completely fine. But we'll just see if there's any in here that are going to surprise me and Dre. So the first one here, we've got top 5 recruit in the country, Harold Perkins, longtime rumored to be Texas A&M. Do you think the Aggies get him, or do you think he surprises us?
No, I think he'll go to A&M and build on that insane defense.
You think he's going to be joined by another top 10 recruit in Shamar Stewart?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah. Stewart was a guy, like, it was kind of hard to get a read on him. Ohio State was big into him for a little bit. Miami was always a factor, Florida, but I mean, I feel like he's gonna buy into that, you know, just juggernaut of a class, and I think he'll end up there.
top four safety in the country here, Jacoby Matthews. This one's a rivalry one here. It's between LSU and the Aggies. Do you think the Aggies pull a surprise here? I think LSU's favored, if I'm not mistaken. But if the Aggies can get Jacoby Matthews, I mean, that pretty much seals a stellar class.
Yeah, I think, again, I think he's going to go to, you know, A&M. I'm not sure. I have question marks about how Brian Kelly's going to do in Baton Rouge. I don't think he's a great fit for their program. And I'm not sure how much recruits are going to buy into him. So it's very important for him to keep Matthews in state. But I'm not sure that he's going to be able to. I feel like if he would have went to LSU, he would have committed a long time ago. And it just didn't happen. There's a lot of instability in the program.
I was going to mention that if he was going to go, he would have done it a while back, at least in my opinion. You know, it's one of those things that if you have a in-state guy, a lot of the times those schools are the first school, the in-state school is the school first school to offer you. And they're going to look at you and they're going to say, hey, we want this guy. He has home family ties. And if he's not already there, there's a question mark. And there's also other schools that are right by Louisiana that will be glad to take him. Take him. It's only a few hours of a drive, man. Five, six.
Yep.
Absolutely. All right. And then there's three O-linemen. I'm just going to rattle them off here. Really the only one I'm interested in, because the other two are pretty much 100% crystal ball. You got Devin Campbell. Clear favorite there is Texas. Stop me if you disagree with those. And then you got Ernest Green. The Texas or the consensus seems to be Georgia on him. I know there's been some other ones.
I think he ends up at Bama.
You think Bama swoops in and takes him?
Yeah, I think it just seems to me like he was, you know, Ohio State, USC, Bama, Georgia. Those are the front runners. And I don't think he's going to go to Ohio State. I feel like, you know, Ohio State took linemen, you know, I don't knowing that he wouldn't go there. So I think it's a Bama-Georgia battle. And it just feels like one where Saban's going to, like, swoop in. He's going to close. And, you know, he's going to get, you know, his blue chip lineman. And that's my hunch. But, you know, he's obviously favorite to Georgia right now. So I guess we'll see.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And if Saban is able to swoop in there and take him, that would be quite the deja vu episode, because it seems like he's done that year in, year out, flipping SEC recruits, especially on the lines. And then we'll just end it here with the last O-lineman, and then I'll lob you a softball to close us out. So Josh Connerly Jr., this guy's a top three tackle. He's kind of 50-50 between Washington and Michigan. And I guess the question I'll pose to you here is, do you think, like, Michigan winning the best O-line award and their late postseason push, as opposed to Washington, who kind of right now just kind of seems to be a fading program from tier one and tier two. Do you think that kind of pushes him over the edge to Michigan, or do you think Washington's able to pull it out?
I think it's like what we mentioned earlier with Washington, with Michigan and LSU. Like, if he would have wanted to go to Washington, he would have committed by now, but he was looking for a reason. He was looking around, and I think he's going to go to Michigan. I mean, they obviously had a phenomenal year, powered by their run game on offense. And I mean, that's pretty, you know, nice award to get, the Joe Moore Award. So I feel like he's gonna commit to the Wolverines pretty shortly. And that would be, you know, it's a pretty bad sign. You know, those are three blue chip prospects you lose in 2 years. You know, you have JT Tuimoloau and Emeka Egbuka, who committed to the Buckeyes last year, both top 10 recruits. And now you have a five-star lineman that you're going to lose to a Big Ten program. So that's kind of a bad sign, you know, for Washington.
No, absolutely. And again, it just reiterates, I think they're kind of a fading program right now, unless they can turn it around, both on the field and in the recruiting war room. I'll finish out here with, like I said, a softball. Top four defensive end, Amari Abor. Big time, 100% crystal ball to Ohio State. Do you think he ends up somewhere else, or the Buckeyes gonna be able to take him home?
It concerns me that he hasn't committed, like, Ohio State's favorite. I think he'll probably commit, but I wish he would have committed by now. Like, he's extended his recruiting, you know, for a while, and I think he wants to visit, you know, some other schools. So we'll see. I mean, if he were to commit today, I think he picks Ohio State, but, you know, maybe another program will impress him a lot.
Yeah, he's another candidate for a late Saban swoop, and Bama's been rumored there as well. So that would surprise me, either him or Ernest Green end up in the Crimson Tide uniform. But yeah, so we kind of talked about recruiting, but there's this other kind of like other piece to the puzzle now, right? In these last couple of years. And that's like the second recruiting, which is transfer portal, right? So it's kind of like college football free agency. I mean, I'm looking at a list here of like positional transfers. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. Like you could actually build a free agency market out of this. And these are like big time players, right? Like Quinn Ewers leaving, Spencer Rattler leaving, just at the quarterback position. You got big time running backs. Yeah. Zach Evans, I mean, Jaden Hazelwood, crazy. So the big ones here are kind of where do you see like the most impact? The two of you see the most impact in terms of these transfers? And who do you think can be like some dark horse, big time contributors?
First, I want to mention Texas, although they've been pretty rough. That Quinn Ewers pickup is going to be massive for them. They've also been working on that O-line, you know, during recruiting season. They've been picking up some guys in-house, in-state guys that really seem like they can make an impact for them, as well as give some faith in Quinn Ewers for them. You know, he has to trust his O-line for him to even really want to be out there playing football for Texas, to be honest with you. I know he's a, you know, Texas boy, but that doesn't make a difference if his O-line can't protect him. You know, I see this transfer portal working out for a lot of teams that don't really get the massive names right off rip. I had mentioned since he could use some transfer portal help here in the next couple of years. And I think that'll play in their favor just because they're starting to get that traction as a name that is prominent here in college football. I think Clemson is going to have to really utilize that transfer portal too. They've been struggling to pick up players in recruiting. They've been struggling to pick up coaches. They're going to have to start using that brand name out there to really pull in some folks here. But there's a few names out there on the market that I think can make a difference for some of these schools. You know, I just see it being one of those years that whenever you play into account how many losses we've had from, you know, people going to the draft, sitting out, transfers, all of that. People are going to really, you know, utilize this transfer portal, almost like you said, free agency.
Yeah, I think Clemson is using the transfer portal, just not the right way. I mean, they're losing guys. They're not gaining guys.
Yeah.
it's just not going well for them.
They're going to have to use it to their favor. Like I said, it's one of those things that, dude, you're losing people to the transfer portal. How else you're going to get them? You know, they're not getting them in recruitment. How else you're going to get them? You're going to have to take them. You're going to have to start taking them. You're going to have to start being that school that, like I said, you build from within and really start looking for other players that are already seasoned vets to really help your program progress here in the next few years. Cause Clemson fans are not going to take any more of this nonsense. They're not.
Yeah. And like for Dabo, he's very against the transfer portal. You know, he believes, you know, he wants to stay loyal to his players, but at some point, you know, you have to adapt to how college football is moving. Like you see Bama, like they add two big names a year. You know, this year they added Jameson Williams, and he's their X factor on offense. He's their number one receiver. He's an absolute superstar, you know, first round pick. You know, they added 2-0 on defense. You know, he played pretty well for them. And, you know, looking at next year, they picked up Jahmyr Gibbs, one of the best running backs in the ACC from Georgia Tech. You know, they have Brian Robinson graduating. They have a couple of unproven backs, but, you know, you have Gibbs for 1 year. You can, you know, rotate your backups, but Gibbs will be an all SEC type player, you know, probably day two pick. And, you know, Elias Ricks, that's a massive pickup. Ready-made All-American and just falls into Saban's lap. So, I mean, if you're Clemson – and you want to compete with Bama and you don't have transfer, you don't use the transfer portal, you're against using it. That means you have to hit on every recruit. Every recruit has to develop like Dabo envisions them to develop. Like, and you can't have any busts or else the other team has a massive advantage over you. Dabo's like been able to get gems. Like a lot of his good, really good players were gems. You know, he has his blue chips, but he's a pretty good scout. I mean, not all your gems are going to hit. So you have to, it's an avenue to bolster your roster. Yeah. What are you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to mention, you know, that's the thing, at least in my mind, is if we're watching this program going the way that we think it's going, you know, Dabo's always had that swift hand and being able to pick up guys. But, you know, like I said, it's going to be time for him to start to change that thought process behind the portal. Like I said, that's going to be where you get your seasoned guys that are going to be able to come in and train some of those freshies, you know, and get them going in the right direction. And a lot of those seasoned vet guys, they've been through programs where they have to trust in the system. They already know what most college coaches are looking for. Once you get to that level, you know, you start looking outside of talent and start looking at people that, you know, follow and really work with your system. So I think that'll be a big thing. I did want to mention South Carolina is doing one hell of a job at using this transfer portal. Spencer Rattler and Austin Stockner, just making that dual threat combo coming over there to South Carolina is that's big for them. Shane Beamer is going to have, you know, he's going to have one hell of a squad to really work with over the next few years.
Yeah. I mean, forget about bringing in puzzle pieces, like just bringing an entire offense. That's basically what South Carolina did. Like, hey man, you know, we don't need like one guy. Let's just go get ourselves an offense in the transfer portal. Let's bring in a big time tight end. Let's bring in one of the best high school quarterbacks of the last 5 years. And let's just make it happen in the SEC.
Yeah. And then like to add to that, like South Carolina is not going to win Spencer Rattler, you know, in recruiting, but they could get him in the transfer portal. They can get, you know, a big name, 5-star QB who hasn't quite lived up to his potential at Oklahoma. So I'll be very curious to see how he does there. I could see him succeeding and I could see him. He didn't look too great this year, you know, when he got benched. So he didn't fully develop under Lincoln Riley. So it'll be interesting to see how he fares in the SEC. Pretty tough conference to play in.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that you just kind of hit on a major point there, Greg, right? Like these big time recruits, they kind of get a fall of grace from their first team. You know, they're very much in play for these other teams that really want them. And I think you guys also touched on a point that I wanted to make as well earlier when you're talking about Clemson, because I think this is something that also you're seeing other big time teams starting to fall in this trap, like namely Ohio State, right? With the whole Eli Ricks thing, trusting your guys. And I get it, right? You want to trust your guys. You want to make them feel like you believe in them. And nothing says, hey, I don't believe in you more than let me just go out and get another guy to potentially replace you. But I mean, at the end of the day, you got to look at what Saban does and you have to respect it, right? I mean, this is a guy who says, like, I trust you, but like, you need to know that there's someone right here who's ready to take your spot if you're not ready to step up to the challenge. And I think that a lot of teams are kind of missing that when they're trying to say, hey, no, we trust our guys. There's nothing wrong with trusting your guys, but like, there's also nothing wrong with like bringing in more guys that you trust so that, you know, you trust everybody on the field and you know that they're ready to play because there's a guy right behind them ready to replace them.
Hey, and that goes for a lot of schools, man. That goes for a lot of schools. I was looking at Tennessee's situation with Heupel losing 30 players. To that point, that's ridiculous. You know, you talk about trusting in guys and, you know, making sure, I know some of it was COVID and things of that nature and injuries and so on and so forth, but like, you got to prepare for stuff like that. And I don't mean that you don't, you know, you don't trust in the fellas that you pick up from beginning day one. But I do think that there's adjustments to be made, especially whenever there's adjustments made to the rule book. That's where, you know, you got to start playing the game instead of just playing your game. Play the game, not your game. And I think that's where you could see a lot of teams make a lot of big changes and differences in the next few years. Like I had mentioned, Cincinnati is a team that'll build from the inside. They'll take transfers. They'll take anybody that's willing to play some football. And it's going to continue to work out that way for them. And they're going to continue to win football games over the next few seasons if they continue to do what they've been doing in recruiting and in the transfer portal.
Yeah, man, their star running backs are a transfer from Alabama. So.
Yep. And if you look at like Michigan State, I mean, they utilize that very well. Mel Tucker was able to accelerate their rebuild. I mean, they're a team that was under 500 the past few seasons. And They're in the top 15 now. They had a tremendous year. They're ranked number two at one point. They beat Michigan. I mean, they found their star running back, Kenneth Walker, on the transfer portal. They had many starters on both sides of the ball. So it's like, it's a way to get ready-made talent. You know, maybe they're not a superstar, but you can get, you know, a solid linebacker in. Look at Ohio State. I mean, the year they got Justin Fields, you have a star QB, but they also got interior lineman Jonah Jackson off the portal. You know, they had depth concerns at that position. So, you know, why not get a guy that, you know, you can rely on that can be an all Big Ten type talent, and it's right there for you. So the portal is a very effective tool to sort of manage issues with depth. And if you have uncertainty, you have, you know, a senior graduating, you know, it's sort of a, you don't have to throw in your younger guy into the fire. And, you know, you have questions, you know, you can get a guy that has been successful and can continue that play for you.
So, yeah. So I think this is a perfect like segue into kind of what I think is our last main topic, which is like, okay, so like these teams are pulling in players and you know, who's going to be like a main impact. I've got like two guys on my list. One of them's more of kind of like, right, I'll say three guys. One of them is a question mark to you guys I want to pose. I'll save him for last. The other one is we don't really know where he's going to end up, but I think wherever he does end up, he's going to be a tank, a running back. And then the last guy that I'm going to start off with is actually, this is my bold take. This is who I think completely off the radar. This is who I think could be one of the best transfer quarterbacks next year. He's a young man by the name of Cameron Ward. He plays football at Incarnate Ward, which is not an FBS school, but he was a highly touted recruit out of high school. Just decided to go to Incarnate Ward. And he is the leader to replace Matt Corral at Ole Miss. So this is a guy that brings a dual threat to the table. I mean, he's absolute electric. I completely, completely recommend you guys check out his film. I think he has instant playmaker ability next year. I think he is very under the radar. But I'll go into the next two guys. The first one is the big question mark for me is Bo Nix. I mean, this is kind of a crazy trade, right? Or a transfer. I mean, this is a guy who was a legacy at Auburn, came in, true freshman starter. I mean, he had some rough years, but you got to hand it to the staff of just saying like, hey, this is our guy. And then he just kind of takes that and essentially throws it in the trash and just says, no, I'm going to go to Oregon and play Pac-12 after dark with Dan Lanning. I don't know. Like, do you guys think he's going to be successful? What do you think?
I mean, I think he'll be better than what they have. Like, I feel like Oregon has been held back by their QB play. I mean, they had Anthony Brown this year. He was decent. But you're not going to make the playoffs, you know, with a kind of like a game manager. He's a dual threat guy. I mean, Bo Nix is very polarizing. He's had some big moments, like when he upset Bama, when he played Oregon a few years ago, actually, and he had that touchdown pass in the last, you know, minute. But he's a very inconsistent quarterback. So it'll be hard to tell, like, will he be able to maintain consistency there? You know, Oregon does have more talent than most of the teams in the Pac-12. But I feel like he'll be able to win games there. But will he be able to change the outcome of the game? You know, I'm not so sure about that.
Yeah, that's my main thing with Bo Nix is I don't think he's the guy he's not a Bryce Young. He's not the game changer that you're going to take him and you're going to say, hey – now we're going from a 9-5, 9-4, you know, Oregon team to you know, a 12-1 title contender. He's not that guy. But at the same time, do I think that he could lead them to a little bit closer of a shot and making a playoff? Yeah, I mean, it's not impossible. We've watched inconsistent quarterbacks do it at a pretty decent rate here in the past few years of getting their teams at least in a striking distance. You know, look at my boys at Oklahoma State. here. You know, we have a very inconsistent quarterback. He throws just about for every touchdown he throws an interception. But it's not impossible. If they have the defense there at Oregon, which that's what they've been really trying to build on over the past few years, they could have a solid shot at making a run for it. But I don't see Bo Nix being somebody that's going to change the whole tide of Oregon football.
Yeah, I think that's something really interesting you point out. I think the focus on defense for Oregon is what really makes that hire of Dan Lanning like so phenomenal. I think that's like one of the most intriguing hires of this cycle. And I think it really is going to build up a nice USC Oregon, you know, offense versus defense style of kind of back and forth in the Pac-12 the next couple of years. I guess the last guy I have before we can move on to like closing statements is I just want to pose this to you guys because he hasn't decided yet, at least to my knowledge. I might have missed it. Former like top running back in the country out of high school, Zach Evans, is going to be leaving TCU. Okay. The teams I have on my list here is potential targets, all of which are pretty scary in the national sense. Georgia, Bama, Texas A&M, and Ole Miss. If Ole Miss could get him, that would be the shock of the century. But where do you guys think he lands? And, like, I don't know. I mean, this guy has, like, Doak Walker Award potential, and he's just kind of chilling in the transfer portal. So this is, like, big news.
I think that there's a good chance that we see him run and fall over to an SEC squad. I think that's where he probably wants to be. He's played in the Big 12. He's seen mid defenses. Also, TCU hasn't had the greatest of, you know, seasons in the past few years. And I think he could be, you know, leaning towards a Georgia and A&M, places that could be using a running back with a high talented, you know, offense as well as, you know, their defenses are doing their thing. So it takes a little bit of pressure off the run game. But I'd assume based upon what I've seen over the past few, you know, days or so, is Zach Evans probably hits Georgia. That's where I've seen that he's swaying towards the most, but he's undecided still. So we'll have to wait and see on that one.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure he doesn't go to Bama. That would be pretty scary with him and Gibbs and Bryce Young and all that talent they've accumulated. He had a very weird recruitment. He was committed to Tennessee and like, I think he signed with them and then he like just dropped his commitment and he committed late to TCU. So like he committed in like May, like going into his freshman year. So it was a very weird recruitment and it's a little weird how, you know, it's a top ranked running back and he didn't end up at, you know, one of these prominent, you know, powerhouse programs. So maybe there's issues with him. I really have no idea. But, you know, I could see Georgia or A&M, like Dre mentioned. I mean, Georgia's produced running backs at a ridiculous clip over the past 5-10 years. He could just be the next guy in line there. But A&M, I mean, they're building a scary program right now. And, you know, they have kind of their defense is set there. And you get a 5-star running back, you know, in the portal. That could be one of those plug and play situations. You go after him. So, but yeah, either of those two programs, I feel like would be a great fit for him. And, you know,
A&M has
be on the national stage.
Yeah. I mean, just like the thing I'll finish up with is like, just like close your eyes for a second and imagine a universe wherein like Quinn Ewers ended up at Texas A&M. And they end up getting Zach Evans and then they pull in this recruiting. I mean, like just that I would throw a bet on them if that occurred for like national championship contender, either like next year or the year after. But I mean,
they still got a 5-star. They still got the second highest ranked quarterback in this 2022 class. They got Connor. Is it Wiegman?
Yeah, something like that.
Dude, they're still pretty.
No, I'm not. Yeah, I'm not taking anything
disgusting.
Away from
thing. I mean,
and like Quinn Ewers, generational talent. You get all coached by Jimbo. I mean, it's just wild to me. But nah, man.
Dude, I think Evans could possibly go to A&M. He is a Texas boy. He's from Houston. You know, he went to North Shore High. He's got a really – they got a really good chance. They just got to sell him on the fact that this is a title team and that he's going to get the chance to go play in the NFL. That's really what I feel like he's, you know, losing at TCU is that opportunity to really shine against top tier teams. And with, like I said, A&M is an SEC team. He's going to an SEC team. I don't see anybody coming in and making that wild guard steal. He's not really interested in anybody else. A&M and Georgia are my two teams that I see him possibly going to. But I think Georgia probably has that upper hand. They are probably going to utilize him right off rip. And I think that'll be a big play into his role there.
Yeah, so I think unless you guys have any closing arguments, we can end it right there. I just want to, take the opportunity, Greg, again to thank you. Hopefully we'll have you back on again sometime soon, maybe around draft day. We can get some of your opinions as well. But once again, thanks for taking the time to join us here on Slightly Offsides, and really appreciate your takes and your guru wisdom on the transfer portal and the recruiting class of 2022.
Yeah, thank you so much. I had a great time here, chopping it up, and looking forward to the draft a lot. It's going to be a weird draft year with no, big time QBs, no, number one overall pick. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, absolutely. So once again, thanks everybody for tuning in. We will catch you next week. Once again, feel free to follow us on Twitter at Slight Offsides. You'll get a bunch of our takes, snippets of our show, and a bunch of our simulated, betting locks of bowl games and games to come. So really appreciate it. Once again, we will catch you guys next week.
Thanks for listening to Slightly Offsides. We'll catch you next time.